Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati, or as some people may say, Cincinnati.
I'm going to start timing with my iPhone stopwatch, your so's, and see how long they can go.
Hello, Sherry.
Hi, Jay.
Sherry Coolidge. She's Sherry Coolidge. I'm Jason Williams. Silent Phil's over there without a microphone. And our special guest today, Sherry, before we get rolling here with our political segment, is, well, I guess we are going to keep talking about politics in our guest segment today. Republican state lawmaker, author of Anti-Corruption Charter Amendment coming up here on the November ballot, Mount Lookout conservative Tom Brinkman. Looking forward to having Tom on, and always interesting.
He is the author of this very controversial charter amendment, 8 points, anti-corruption, and it's the only, charter amendment that actually made the ballot. He did it in a petition, a signature gathering effort, and there's just a lot of buzz around it because, I don't think we're going to have a lot of council candidates with 35 on the ballot, on the podcast, but he's the author of this very important charter amendment, love it or hate it. And so we want to talk to him about that and look for a series of stories from Scott Wortman and myself vetting the heck out of this charter amendment. There is nothing I don't know about it, Jason.
Amazing that there is a faction of the Democratic Party that's fighting against it, given all of the corruption and scandal that's happened this term in City Hall, most of which has been done by Democrats.
I mean, part of the issue
to
is
fight against this
it's 8 points in one. Normally, we see these charter amendments, it's 1 point. And this is kind of like a potpourri of things. Yeah. And there's two or three that a lot of people really don't like. It's not like everyone's like, I hate anti-corruption measures. It's these specific points. And I don't want to go into them now because I want to talk about the bus tax this morning.
Let the voters decide though.
Yes.
Period. Well, end of story.
We're gonna. Yep. It made the ballot.
That's right. Did you say you're going to talk about the bus tax?
Yes, because we covered this for years. Issue 7, a transportation tax, finally gets passed because they do a state law change, which John Cranley drove. This is one of his proudest moments when I was talking to him about his run for governor. He mentioned this to me. And it was like laying the groundwork to make sure that it could pass. Instead of we're going to fix the city buses, right? That just was a non-starter. They just drew up a plan where they were going to help. They were going to do road projects, in infrastructure projects.
That's how they got it passed.
That's how they did. Yesterday we got the peek at year one funding, the projects, 30 projects for year one. And I didn't cover this and I read it as a citizen this morning. Scott Wortman wrote a story about it. And it is just, it's 30 projects. And one of them is near and dear to my heart that I've never even mentioned or heard anyone mention, a sidewalk from this road to this road in Delhi Township. That's super frustrating to me if I'm running or walking the loop with my dog. It needs a sidewalk. And I think that in my head all the time. And there it was on this list. And so it is a list. The Western Hills Viaduct is the biggest project on there. Funding from this tax and many other places to get that project finally done. I wrote about that when I was the county reporter with Todd Portoon from 2010 to 2014. It is 2021. That is finally getting done. But there's just these small projects that mean something to the communities.
Tax, 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 tax. And and at the end of the day, this issue 7 is, I think we'll look back on it 10 years from now, 5 years from now and say, that was probably a mistake because we gave $100 million a year to a bus system that is certainly necessary. It needs to be there. But did we really need to give $100 million a year to a bus system in a place that public transportation is never going to be, it's never like the entire – we're never going to be some major city where everyone's taking public transportation to work. And I certainly, I appreciate, and value – the bus system. I value how important it is to helping connect people to entry-level jobs and to jobs. And but yeah, you really look at this thing, and certainly I think, but a good piece of this is I think this infrastructure, I think this is a positive. I guess that's what I'm trying to get to, is this is a positive. It's about time to get this Western Hills Viaduct done. The time for talking about it was 20 years ago, and now this is a good thing. You got the last thought on this? Or no?
No.
Or did I just cover it?
You just covered it, basically.
Well, you're getting ready to say something.
No. I do, you guys. I do try not to give my opinion. I'm the City Hall reporter. Jason's a columnist. That's, you know, that's what he does. And bless him for that, because that is a very difficult place to put yourself in, to give your opinion on things. Not everyone likes that, it turns out. I see some of what he goes through on social media and what the kind of emails he gets. And so I give him a lot of props for that. And I kind of stick to the facts.
I will say this.
It's my job.
I'll say this. That the right thing was done, that it was taken to the people, the citizens of Hamilton County, and the citizens of Hamilton County said they wanted this.
They did it in a pandemic, Jason.
And so you can't
remember the canceled election, and then it's like
in a very Democrat election in this county. Yes, and it barely passed, but it passed. And so, how can you argue with what a majority of voters, at least a majority of voters in that election, said? But I mean, you can argue it, and I certainly can argue it. And there are factions of it that I like, and there are factions of it that I don't like.
I'm going to run between Delhi Pike and Foley Avenue on Neve, just so you know.
Excellent. See, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. I mean, it's a good thing if more bus routes are put in that get folks to these job centers.
Which is, that was a big thing. That was one of the driving forces that you saw, really, well, the business community get behind that because they needed to get people to the job centers. And the bus system as it was not working for that.
I'm concerned about that we're going to get 10 years down the road and we're still going to have these same things that we're arguing about, that we've been arguing about for the last 10 years. Is this exact thing. Like, well, why aren't bus routes going from this place in the city or county to this area where there's a bunch of jobs? And it's really hard to be, especially again on it, limited money in a big county with buses. Yeah. There's going to be times when you can't put a route there because it's just not possible, because maybe there's only two people that from all over the area that work in this place or something like that who need bus transportation. But what I'm saying is I fear that we're going to be having that discussion down the road.
I want to encourage everyone to read Scott Wortman's story with the very pithy headline, "Here are the projects the new transportation sales tax will pay for." Thank you, Scott, for doing that. And, you know, he kind of goes through how we got here and the decision-making process. But at the very bottom of that story is that list you're looking for about what's being done in my community.
With that, let's go over and bring on our special guest, Tom Brinkman. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and pleased to welcome in to our podcast for the first time in our 3-year history of the podcast, Ohio State lawmaker, Republican Tom Brinkman, and I should also say the author of the, I guess, the hotly debated new anti-corruption charter amendment. Tom, how are you?
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
And council candidate.
Oh yeah, and council candidate as well. How could I forget that? You just freshly approved for the ballot on Monday by Secretary of State Frank LaRose, and things are off and rolling, huh, Tom?
Yeah, 49 days left till the election.
Oh,
not that anyone's counting.
Every day someone gives me a countdown number.
People start voting in 21 days or 20 days, so it's coming quick.
October 5th is when early voting starts. I have to say, I saw a sign, a billboard for Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney yesterday, and it had like the election day on it. Early voting starts October 5th. Like it was like all of the information, and it was really, I might as well have been the countdown calendar for me.
We're post Labor Day now, and it's coming up. And Tom, you've been in the news just a little bit in the past week, but you know, I don't know, where do we even start? Let's first start with, I think, the charter amendment. And can you go back to when, you know, this all came about? You went out and got 4,600 and some valid signatures, no small task. But where did this all come about for you, and how do you decide and decide what to do to put on this kind of a sweeping charter amendment?
Well, you know, these things don't happen overnight. We're kind of, there's a celebration, I guess, of sorts for the Western Hills Viaduct. We got the money. But, you know, it didn't happen overnight. It took years and years of planning, many false starts. I found it kind of interesting today that I saw Alicia Reese talking about how great it was. Well, 4 or 5 years ago, Bill Seitz prepared the ability of county commissioners to add $5 to license fees to help raise money for the Western Hills Viaduct and any other county that wanted to do that. And Alicia vehemently opposed it, actually made a floor speech against giving the county commissioners that authority. So I just, you know, I find that ludicrous, you know, funny things in politics. But the thing is,
that was a segue. I do want to just say that was a segue. Jason and I were just, before we talked to you, talking about the bus tax, which is helping pay for the Western Hills Viaduct. And you are right. That project took a long time to come to be. And so are you saying that your charter amendment, it's kind of like that?
Well, that's right. So obviously the corruption built over time. It didn't happen overnight. We have two former council people in prison or jail or something along that line. And then we have three indicted. And so
Tom, we have to give everyone background. He's talking about Tamaya Dennard, of course, one of the council members recently. And then a little bit off to the side, former councilwoman Lakita Cole has gotten into trouble, and she was arrested on two sets of different charges related to different issues. And so that case is pending. But go ahead. Sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
That's okay. You know, Yeah, Jason, you had written like, you know, where's the Blue Ribbon Committee? Where's the committee starting to look into this, to change this? And, you know, we had a committee for the Brent Spence Bridge. We have a committee for, you know, issue 7. And I didn't see anybody really stepping up. So, being term limited, I thought, you know, this is something I could dip my toe in. And I went and met with people across the political spectrum, beginning a year ago, and everybody from Steve Shabbat and Chip Gerhardt to Bridget Kelly and Greg Harris and Bob Daner with the Charter Party. And I have a whole list of like, I think 25 different people. And we started talking about ideas that could do something to change this. Now, we didn't include all we talked about. I mean, we had talked about some stuff with campaign finance. We didn't go there. We tried to, the charter, their number one thing on their website was getting rid of the mayor pocket veto, but number two is something with emergency clause abuse. And we looked into that, and we just didn't find where it could be, what language can be workable there. It's in some cases, you have to let the politicians control themselves, in some cases. So we came up with this group, and then we had it written, and we had a lot of different attorneys look at it to make sure it was right, because we wanted to start collecting signatures on the primary election day. We probably got about 15% of our signatures on primary election day. However,
a shout out to a reader who ran into a petition gatherer at the polls and is like, "Do you know about this?" And thank you for talking to me that day, Tom. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. And it was, unfortunately, I was hoping we'd get more, but it was rain in the middle of the day and it just didn't. We got what we got. And then we started the long haul of putting folks together and collecting a little money because, you know, you do have some folks, you know, they're going out there and then we got to buy clipboards. We got to pay for printing. We got to, you know, people, we did all sorts of crazy things. We bought magnets that we put on vans that for helping people maybe attract people to sign it. We did some stuff with up at Kroger's and get some signs and got run off. I mean, some of our things didn't work. But the bottom line is we got 4,668 plus. You know, we're on the ballot. And other things broke our way also. I mean, city council certainly had the ability to put some anti-corruption things on the ballot. None of those made it to the starting line, I guess, the election ballot, unfortunately. And so we're the only one there. We're the only thing there. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people said to me when I'm getting signatures, and I collected hundreds of them, was we got to do something. You know, what, you know, we're glad you're out here. Somebody's got to do it, that type of thing. And that's why, you know, you got to build it and build the group and build a coalition. And I feel pretty good about it right now.
I mean, Jason, don't you have a Go Herd magnet on your car? So you're telling me that some people could have a Charter Amendment magnet on the back of their car? Do you have one?
You mean me or Tom?
Tom.
well, you know,
I'm all for the anti-corruption stuff. So, but no campaign paraphernalia for me. but
right,
for Tom,
right, you go hurt. But the thing would be, we are just getting started. I mean, it's just only been a week since we know our issue. Well, I guess it's been a little bit more than that, maybe 10 days that we know our issue three. And we are starting to gather resources on there. We haven't even filed a PAC yet for the Yes on Issue 3 campaign because we're trying to figure out what form that's going to take, which I think is important. You want to do it right, just like when we wrote this, got the issues together. We collaborated, we got people's input, and then we'll move ahead. But I think it's going to be... I think it has a lot of legs, and I hope so, because, again, Cincinnati has to do something. And when I talk to CEOs who are trying to recruit people from out of town, they don't like the fact that somebody might Google Cincinnati, city of Cincinnati, whatever the term is that would pop up, you know, three indicted awaiting trial or you know, first scandal in years. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's something we do need to address.
I mean, I myself, sometimes when I'm going back to look at my own stories on this issue, if I'm looking for my background or whatever, I Google it. And you know what comes up? A New York Times story about all the corruption in Cincinnati. Like, this is not something that has remained local. It was a national story.
Right. And I think there's a lot of legacy things that Cincinnati has going for it. And despite the fact that we're small, we have fewer people in us than Mesa, Arizona, and most people couldn't find out where that is on a map. I may be maybe even mispronounced it. Maybe it's
I've
Mesa,
been there.
Arizona.
It's Mesa. I applied for a job there. It's one of the first jobs I ever applied for out of college. But anyway,
but Cincinnati is viewed as, you know, we're a major league team. That's why town because we have the major league sports. And so when something like Cincinnati falters, kind of like how Detroit, when Detroit was falling just in a free fall, the press and the media and the public were like, oh, man, Detroit, that used to be a proud city. Look what's happened to it and the lamenting about it, et cetera. And I think that's the thing that why the New York Times would pick up on Cincinnati, because Cincinnati was a beacon with the charter movement, the city manager form of government. The long time lack of corruption, all of a sudden, it just kind of, wow. And so, but again, we can't rewrite the past. We can just try to make the future better.
So you don't want to break some news right now and say who's going to run that pack and who's going to give to it, do you?
Well, again, until we have a pack, we're not allowed to solicit or do anything along that line. And I really don't know. I know I can't be the treasurer because I need to get my own campaign going, and that I got to get off the ground. So there's just a lot going on. you know, maybe mission accomplished by the folks who delayed my being on the ballot a little bit. I lost some time on the being able to campaign, but we'll get it back up to gear here soon. But I am trying to get some meetings together and try to figure this out and get it moved ahead.
You know, there were some technicalities with your ballot issues, like minor things related to the date, right? Yourself and Tierra Powell. We did see Secretary of State Frank LaRose this week, break the tie and be like, in the most non-political way, because it put yourself and a community activist from East Westwood on the ballot. And who argued your case? Kurt Hartman. We've talked about him on this program before.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of an interesting thing because, again, Kurt argued to keep AFTAB off the ballot back in the May, and they said, nope, none of this stuff is substantial. We're going to all vote for them to put them on. I said, okay. So when I went in, I was pretty confident because I thought, you know, these are very minor things. The prosecutor, a representative on the board, had said all along, hey, this doesn't matter. The presumption is they have more candidates, more debate, more people in the public square, and I was really surprised, and that's why I used the term dumbfounded, that they would say, no, we're going to keep people off the ballot. I was just like, wow. I thought this was all about access and everything. I'll have to remember that next time I get accused of voter suppression in some way, that I experienced it as a candidate suppression.
Well, Tom was incredibly partisan, I think, what the Board of Elections did there. And then you turn around, also there's a foot lawsuit that's been filed by Democrat activists, including Cecil Thomas, who public records show he actually signed your petition, your charter amendment petition. And he's a fellow member of the Ohio General Assembly, like yourself. So let's get this straight. Cecil Thomas signed your petition to get your charter amendment on the ballot, and yet now he's one of, I believe, four Democrats who have signed onto this lawsuit to try to keep your charter amendment off of the ballot.
As ludicrous as that sounds, that's exactly right. Public records show that you can go to the Board of Elections and ask them what petitions has Tom Brinkman, Cecil Thomas, any individual signed, and they have it right there in their computer. And he didn't sign it for me. I had Jim Tarbell sign mine and Michelle Dillingham and Bridget Kelly and Steve Shabbat. So I did get a fair amount of elected officials and candidates. But I had heard he had signed it, and then to turn around and sue over it. But, you know, I don't want to be, you know, I'm not trying to put people down, but in this form, because I don't think that's productive. But certainly it's that type of kind of bouncing around on issues that I think the public doesn't like to see. And it certainly hurts people's effectiveness when they are up there in Columbus or in City Hall trying to get something done.
I mean, I have to say, they did file this lawsuit over the charter amendment. First of all, the city solicitor, you know, kind of moved it forward and found it all legal. I mean, inside City Hall, they don't love this, but they did find it legal, pushed it forward. But, you know, something I keep going back to when I talk about this, and I talk about it all day, every day pretty much, is the time to care about this petition drive was during the petition drive. You did not hide what was going on. When I heard about this and I called you, you picked up the phone. You're like, oh yeah, it's an anti-corruption measure. Here are the 8 points. You outlined them for me. I wrote a story. We knew this was going on. And everyone just kind of was like, okay, you get the signatures. It moves forward. It gets on the ballot. And everyone's like, oh my God, no. And it's like, but we've known about this for 6 months.
And, you know, we put out that little card, which I've text people, which we handed out. We handed out thousands of those cards. It was every point in a row written as it appeared, no sexy language like, that it was just the actual language. And we were very upfront. And like I said, we would see candidates and elected officials at parades and festivals, and we'd almost gravitate towards them and say, will you sign it? And very few of them turned it down because, you know, they felt it deserved to be on the ballot. But now all of a sudden people are like, you know, it's almost like the you know, in Casablanca, where the French lieutenant says, "Oh my gosh, gambling's happening here. You know, let's shut the place down." I mean, and then the guy says, "Here's your winnings, sir." You know, it's just.
Good Casablanca reference when we're talking about charter amendments.
Yes, but it's almost like again, I say to people, and I hope I'm not trying to be sacrimonious here, but, you know, my whole life, maybe being in sales, being through education, et cetera, and I wasn't a Rhodes Scholar. I wasn't perfect by any means. But in so much in life, you just got to get off your dead ass and get to work. And anybody could have done this. You know, anybody could have moved something ahead. I actually had some admiration for the people with the issue 3 in the fall, in the spring. I mean, I didn't agree with the issue. I voted no when it was on the ballot. But you know what? They actually got organized. They went out and got signatures. They put an issue on the ballot. They put it into the public debate. Hooray for them. That's what the process is about. Now they lost, but at the same time, they did something. And a lot of people just run around and gripe and moan when there's always time to go and do something. There's plenty of time to organize and get something done. And I see that in sales. I see that in running campaigns, in any good effort. I know one guy, I'll give you another example, Jeff Birding. Gets a lot of grief because of stadiums and teams. Mostly good grief because the teams aren't winning. But the reality is, you know, he created something, by getting with the folks, organizing a plan, putting it in place, selling it to the public, whether it's buyer's remorse or not. People who do those types of things, again, you might not agree with what they're doing, but at least they're getting off their butt and moving stuff ahead. And we could deal with a few more of those people maybe in the city of Cincinnati, because we brag when we add 6,000 people to our city population over 10 years, and you're like, that's a big achievement. I don't know. I think that we need to maybe be getting a little bit bigger, some things ahead of us, and look at some stuff, have a bigger, better vision, I guess is what I'm saying, on some of these issues, and get out there early, sell it to the public, and move it ahead.
So let me ask this question. So you've been in politics a long time. You know how this works. You are familiar with the city. Do you think a Republican can really win for council this time?
Well, I'm glad you used those last few words, this time. I think yes, this time, and why? Number one, you only have one elected incumbent who's coming back.
Greg Landsman.
Right, exactly. You have a ton of candidates. You have a lot
35.
Of different. right. You have a lot of different slates. There's a lot of different arguments going on. Obviously. You know, the Democrat slate picked a lot of people who hadn't won before or run before. I'm not specifically sure of that, but I know they didn't pick Brian Gary or Michelle Dillingham, people who were had run before with them. You have a they wouldn't allow people to cross endorse. So if somebody was with Charter, they couldn't also get the Democrat endorsement. So there's a lot of splitting there. And I don't think it's going to be a high turnout election. I mean, we got 63,000 voted 4 years ago in what I would say was somewhat contentious election between Simpson and Cranley. A lot of accusations, a lot of money spent. I don't think that it's in the character of David Mann to engage in an election that way. And certainly, I don't follow how much money he's raised or any of that stuff, but I just don't see that it's going to be that contentious, and therefore maybe, 60,000 people vote, maybe less. And therefore, to get what you need, what is ninth place 4 years ago needed 34.5% of the vote. The 2 years before that was 37. Phil Heimlich back in the 90s won ninth place with 31% of the vote.
Wow.
Now, Cecil Thomas won ninth place with 41% of the vote one time. But that was with a very small field. So you had all those things together. Maybe there's an opportunity there. I certainly hope there is. It's supposedly a nonpartisan race, which again is probably one of the failings of why we've gotten so, we aren't moving things ahead like we should, because it should be about people who can move the city ahead and get some stuff done. So, I'm optimistic. I think it's a good plan that I have on issue three that will increase people's interest in me, but also good government is important. So who knows? I may be wrong, but if there was ever a year, it would probably be this.
So you are wrapping up your state house career, and we're looking forward, right? But can you look back for me? Can you tell me, what are the three things that you're the most proud of over your state house career?
Well, I'll tell you the first thing is that I have really tried. My district has a little Miami River running through it. And when it has come to items that would help that area, whether it's funding of parks, funding of recreation facilities, bike trails, those types of things, I have been very parochial on trying to drive money and resources to those entities. And that's everything from Home of the Brave Park up in Sims Township down to Stanbury Park, which just had a ribbon cutting, Alms Park, Alt Park, the bike trail that I got money for as a group. It wasn't just Tom Brinkman, but making sure there was focus towards that bridge that they're building now. Newtown received some money for their parks. We got money there for Columbia Township. But it's all along that little Miami River Valley, because I feel that is really kind of the recreational gem for my district and the people that live on both sides of it. It's the amount of traffic that goes down there and enjoys that area. Not to make it a national park where you can't, put any construction into it. I'm talking about really be able to use it with bike trails, recreation. So that's been, and by doing that in a larger picture, I've supported the process that does drive more funding out into the county and into little projects like an alt park, which is not in the county necessarily, but it's in the city. But it shifts all the money from not just going downtown. We need to make sure we take care of those quality of life things out in the areas. And so we should have another capital budget thing coming up here shortly, as far as the proposals and the vetting process. And I hope to continue to be involved in that. And I would also add that as a little plug, the city does not get that involved. The city comes in with two or three asks, and then they walk away. And I don't know whether they just assume that their stuff's going to be done because they're the city, or they think a legislator will pick them up. But I think the city, should I get elected to council, should be more involved in that process to make sure more of those funds that we all pay for go to those. So that would be my first thing. The second thing would be that I made some promises going in. I hate to say this because I know people take it out of context. Someone once said the only honest politician is one that's once bought stays bought. And a lot of people think that is involved with bribes and things like that. But I interpret it as kind of like you dance with the one who brung you. And the folks that were supportive of me, the pro-lifers, the Second Amendment folks, the anti-tax folks, those folks I've been very, very supportive and loyal to, and have really continued to vote and look that same way on those issues. And to this day, when I run into those folks, they thank me for staying true to those causes. And those are the people who knocked on doors and made the phone calls and wrote the $25 and $100 checks to get me in office. So I'm pretty proud of that.
You do make a good point there, because sometimes we have seen, like, those, whether whatever the issues are aside, but we have seen, you know, people kind of go along where the money is taking them. You know, these donations for this, and then there's the votes. And so, which we're paying much more attention to now and kind of following the money. And that is such a big thing, but that is a good point.
Yeah. So I think I like the fact that I've been able to stay true to that. And it's always funny when I see something like, everybody says, well, there's big money in the gun lobby. I say, I wonder where that is, because the gun people contribute to me are giving me 25. One guy gives me like $10 four times a year. I mean, I'm talking about the individuals. Now, maybe up in Congress and the Senate, the NRA plays up there. I don't know. But I do know that staying true to them is important. Now, and then finally, the third thing is, I really look back and, you know, you come in as a wide-eyed, you know, oh my gosh, how did I get here? And very quickly you look around and you say, geez, how did they get here? You try to find out how things work and how you make things done, get things done. So I'll give you one good example. I was approached by constituents, because that's where I generally introduce bills, is if constituents approach me and want something done. So I was approached by a constituent named Beth, and she was very interested in the, the overpopulation of stray cats and dogs. And she wanted to come up with an idea that wouldn't cost the taxpayers any money, that would encourage more spaying and neutering of these animals. And so what she came up with an idea was, is to give additional CE credit to our veterinarians if they would engage in this. Great idea. She approached me. She approached Bridget Kelly. We joined, we're on Republican and Democrat. We introduced a bill. We got it through the House, and it died in the Senate. Well, what was happening was the vets were working against us behind the scenes, and they stopped it. So the next term came along, and the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So I worked with Bridget and said, we got to change this, because if we send it to the Senate the exact same, they're just going to stop it again. So we spent a lot of time. We came up with, really, instead of giving them CE credit, we've taken the funds that they pay in as membership dues, as they have to do for the Veterinarian Association for their licensing, and use some of that to help with pay off their student loans of young veterinarians. So, it, again, doesn't cost the taxpayers any money. They're using the funds that they contribute or are charged every year to help improve their profession. And so we hammered this out. We got it through the House, went over the Senate, passed right away, and it's law now. So you find out how to build teams and how to build relationships and try to get stuff done. And I think I'm a lot better doing that now than I certainly was in year one, two, three, and four. You really find out how you got to get that done. And so I'm proud that I figured that out. And because you do find there's members up there who never figure that out. Now, Jason probably would know some of those names. And they just don't get anything done. And you look at the litany, they don't pass any law. Not that you got to have your name on every law to get it passed, but they just don't get stuff done. And maybe they retire happy and say, I never sold out or whatever, or they grumble. But I just like the fact that, you know, a light finally goes off and you figure out how do you get stuff moved along and put things in place, just like we started our conversation out about the Western Hills Viaduct. You have to put puzzle pieces together, and it takes time over time. And you got to remember that we could have the greatest idea down here among seven legislators, and we still got to deal with 92 others up there who are saying to us, why do we care about that? And that also is part of the dynamic. It's made probably the same in city council is, you might have a great idea for something, but you got to convince other people on why it's a good idea and even why it's going to be good for them too.
So if elected to council in November, Tom, what are a couple of high priority issues for you that you would tackle being on the council? And again, this is, will be back to 2 year term. So over the 2 year term, what would you really try to focus on?
Well, first of all, I really want to get issue three passed. And I think we need to move into the next look at that. Like I said, there were a lot of other issues bouncing around with campaign finance, with the emergency ordinances, that type of thing. And so we should look at that, whether something else should be put on by council. Number two, right away, we need to be involved in the next capital bill funding. Every year I look around and say, well, what's the next big project? And I sometimes there's always something there, whether it's a stadium or whatever. But this year there's really nothing there. So now's the time for the city, while the vetting process will happen, I don't know, October, November, it doesn't really get introduced until, you work up there in March, April, before we get voted on. So I think the city, and I would help my colleagues understand how we can be more effective in that and drive some funding to our parks and also our joint parks. We have some joint parks with Great Parks of Cincinnati, Arm Leader, Firm Bank. I would like to do work on that. I'm very concerned about the move for density of, so this is another issue. I see how we're building all this stuff all around. Well, we need population density. We need bodies. We need earnings tax. There's an imbalance with the tax abatements that are going on, what they're doing to neighborhoods, and just like, hey, we just need locations. I do agree with Liz Keating, and she has said that we can't catch up. I mean, and you look at any statistics, the housing industry has not kept up with population growth and the need for housing. And we really need to look at that and find a way to add additional abodes or housing without destroying the neighborhoods at the same time. Those issues, I know there's some issues here at Mount Lookout Square, just two blocks from me. There's issues along the Wasson Way where they're going to put in a 6 or 8 story building just there and without kind of changing the character of these neighborhoods. Certainly we all want some population density because we, like I kind of made a comment before, we've only grown a few thousand in 10 years. But I think there's a way to do it right that matches how it looks in those communities without trying to change the whole complexion of them, because Cincinnati has some really neat communities and we should really try to keep that neatness about them and not just become just very vanilla and they all the buildings look the same. So I'd be that's more of a design aspect, but I also know we do need more density and we do need more facilities for our folks. So those are kind of three of the issues I'd like to look at right away.
Yeah. A diverse group of different interests and projects there. Tom, thanks.
Right.
Yeah, Tom, hey, great stuff today, and thanks so much for joining us here to talk about the charter amendment and all this other stuff.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me, and certainly there's going to be a lot of debate, I hope. COVID hasn't dampened that desire out there in community councils and other forums to talk about it. But you guys are certainly central in that because you're the Daily News, and we really appreciate you guys and what you work hard every day to get content out there. It's not an easy job.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks again to Tom Brinkman for joining us here today. Check out Sherry's coverage on all City Hall in this election for more details. We didn't get into the nitty gritty details of that anti-corruption because I believe it's a nine point plan. Is that right?
Eight points.
Eight different things. So if you want to read more about that, at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter, Sherry's on Cincinnati.com, obviously also in the Inquirer. But let's shift into our, and I've been, I cannot wait. Well, let me make, I'm getting ahead of myself. We have arrived at our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And, I couldn't wait for this one. Could not wait for this
one,
Sherry.
All right, let's do it. This is a private joke between myself and Jason. It spilled out onto Twitter.
Facebook.
On Facebook. Well, Twitter a little bit, too, with Chris Wetterich kind of taking your side on this and mocking this event. But I went to dinner in Blanc on Saturday night, which is a worldwide event that certain cities do. He's laughing at me. Whatever.
I'm not laughing at you.
I was not alone at this event.
I'm laughing with you.
It's a worldwide event. It started in Paris. It's like a surprise picnic. You bring all of your things. You dress all in white. And you go to a surprise venue in your city. It's a nice big sense of community. And this year's surprise venue was the Banks.
So I have a question about this, and this is the thing that stumps me about it. So, like, let's say you have to wear all white head to toe, right?
Correct.
So, like, what if I had shown up with, white shirt, white pants, and black shoes?
You would not be allowed to go.
Are you kidding me? Wait
the
a minute.
Rules but I'm... Are, there's just a list of rules, and you agree to them when you say you want to go to this event.
So this is what stumps me about the event. Is that you have to bring, and Sherry's smiling over there because she knows what I'm going to ask her because we've had this discussion many times, sometimes privately and sometimes on social media. And I remember this because this goes back to like 2015 when I started on this high horse on this. So you have to bring your own food. You have to bring your own plates, silverware, napkins, table, chairs. You absolutely have to wear all white. You can't wear like I said, brown shoes or black shoes or different color, like everything.
I mean, Jason, would you wear black shoes with all white? No, you
wouldn't. I think it would look kind of snazzy actually, but you know my fashion sense. After you have to do all that, you had to bring everything.
Yes, everything. We did. Yes. All right. Alex Coolidge might not have loved
But you have to pay
that.
To do it.
Not that much money. I mean, because there's transportation to the location. You're paying for the transportation.
But you could not drive to that location yourself?
Well, would that be a surprise then? No, it's not. There is also a sense of community. You're doing it with people. I met some amazing people. We sat next to a group from Columbus. Because Columbus doesn't have dinner en blanc, and they were intrigued by it, came down for it last year, loved it so much, came back, spent the whole weekend here, two hotel nights. They did activities we have here and spent some time here for the weekend, did dinner en blanc, brought all this stuff, right? Their own tables and everything. We sat there and we talked and we compared our cities. It was a fun conversation.
What else do you have to say about it? Because I think I'm done.
I know.
Until next year.
I enjoy it. I'm not alone. There's probably like 1,000 people.
Did you notice that I did not go on any kind of a social media rant about it this year?
No, but I knew what you were thinking.
Your pictures were lovely, though.
We had a really good time. It was kind of a date night for Alex and I, too. I put so much effort into it. Like, we just needed to... And we walked around downtown, and we had a good time. Also, kudos to the corner market at the Banks. It's located next to Ruth Chris because we may have needed some extra alcohol, and I had not been in there, and they have everything you need.
So does it could it be an – could you be wearing an off-white
no.
dress? Like, you know, like
no.
You know what I'm talking about? The eggshell white?
I do, Jason, but no. The rules are very specific.
So it's not dinner in eggshell white.
It is not. It's not dinner in cream.
Eggshell
blanc.
It's not
dinner in I enjoy it. Paddle Fest remains my favorite event of the year, and then dinner in blanc is the second
I think I'm
going to
do Paddle Fest with you next year.
I think
you should.
That
just looks like too much fun.
That's a good day.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we've had a pretty jam-packed
episode.
We could
wear all white to that and just do our own dinner in blanc at Paddle Fest. See?
don't know. We're going to be, Paddle Fest is in the Big Muddy. Ohio.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, you came home dirty and.
Well, well, here. You could wear all white to that, get all muddied up in the river, come home, wash your clothes. Obviously, it's not going to come out. And I think that your shirt and pants would come out probably a cream off-white color
and
there.
And you won't be able to wear them again.
And you won't be able to wear them to dinner in Blanc. See, that's
all
ridiculous.
Right. We did have a red wine accident, but it's all okay now.
Did it come out?
It did.
Did it, really? Some good Procter & Gamble bleach, I bet.
Actually, yes. Tide whitening detergent. Anyway, we are way off topic.
Yeah, we are. Which, yes. I'm all about Tide Pods now, by the way, to get my clothes clean. It's the only thing that gets my clothes clean. Anyway. Are we done?
We're done.
Are we? Come on. This is fun.
Of course it is.
We're having a good time.
Start lobbying Bethany about dinner en blanc.
It's not going
to
happen. It's absolutely not going to happen. But I'm working on. Never mind. I'll share a thought that I have on that a year from now when the next dinner en blanc comes along. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.